Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
When knights at the round table, we dance whenever we're able. We do routines, we call the scenes, we put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. When knights at the round table, our shows are more mid table. So many times we give and rhyme, but our quite something able. We're off to mad in Camelot, we sing from the die of Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Sam, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how do you get that, eh?
By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
Oh, didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help, I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street singing songs and carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop now. What's that sound? Everybody look.
If I were the devil, if I were the prince of darkness, I'd want to engulf the whole world in darkness, and I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree, thee. So I'd set about however necessary to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first. I'd begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve. Do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth. I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. And the old, I would teach to pray after me, our Father, which art in Washington. And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions. Just let those run wild. Until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. Within a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography. Soon I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle. If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who wanted until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. And what'll you bet? I couldn't get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. I would caution against extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, that what you see on TV is the way to be. And thus I could undress you in public, and I could lure you into bed with diseases for which there is no cure. In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's doing. Paul Harvey.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. Is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see,
my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. Grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. Came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, 'cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Constant sorrow all through his days. I am a man of constant sorrow. I've seen trouble all my days. I bid farewell to old Kentucky, the place where I where he was born and raised. For 6 long years I've been in trouble. No pleasure here on earth I found. For in this world I'm bound to ramble.
perhaps I'll die upon this train. Perhaps he'll die upon this train. You can bury me in some deep valley for many years where I may lay. Sleeping in my grave,
while he is sleeping in his grave.
Maybe your friends think I'm just a stranger, my face you never will see no more. But there is one promise that is given, I'll meet you on God's golden shore.
He'll meet you on God's golden shore.
Hello everybody, you're listening to the Knights of the Round Table at www.shazazradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html. So far none of the knights have showed up, so it looks like it's all me today for a moment. See how that goes. So anyway, you know, sometimes when I listen to myself talk, I sound like, a loudmouth, a know-it-all loudmouth. And I get on my own nerves sometimes talking, so I can imagine I probably get on a lot of people's nerves when I talk. But I spent most of my life stumbling through life and doing crazy things and trying to, you know, go places. It really wasn't, didn't have any kind of direction, I guess you'd say. And so, you know, at some point in my life, I saw that the world was kind of not the way I thought it was. It was kind of messed up. And so I get this crazy idea of maybe I'm going to have to try to fix it. I'm going to have to try to right all the wrongs of the past and try to do something and help the world find a different direction. You know, back around about 98, I decided one day, because I kept hearing all these things on shows like Alex Jones and different, you know, talk radio shows. So I thought I was going to call up the President of the United States. Now, I was going to ask the President if the world was as bad as what they said it is. And so I called up the White House, and I'm on there waiting. Operators asked me, and I said, what's the chances I could talk to the President of the United States? And the lady said, he's not available. And I said, well, when will he be available? And she said, well, he's not available. And I said, so essentially what you're telling me is there's no way possible that I'm ever in my lifetime ever going to be able to speak to the President of the United States. And she said, he's not available. So all the words of wisdom that was in my mind that I was going to speak to the President of the United States if I had the opportunity to have the man on the phone at the time, you know, just kind of like they're never going to get said to the man. So that's kind of frustrating, because, you know, that's supposedly the head of our country and the representation of our country, and I'm supposed to be able to, you know, talk to my representation and, you know, see what's going on. What needs fixing in this world? How can I help? That kind of deal, you know. Roll up your sleeves and get to work. No, that wasn't going to happen. some, ironically enough, some point in history, they used to be able to walk into the White House and visit with the president and tell him what your concerns were or thank him for a good job, that kind of stuff. But nowadays, modern days, because of shenanigans, you know, people trying to whack the president and all that kind of stuff, you can't get within miles of the president. And you can't get them on the phone. Unless by some chance there's something that they need of you, you'll never get to speak to them. You know, if there's a photo op to be made, or, you know, some purpose, it'd be short, sweet, look, let's get our picture taken. Hey, look, you met the president, and you never really had a time to sit down and actually talk to him about the things that's going on out here in this world. So, in some sense, it seems really strange to think that there's somebody in this world that you just can't speak to. You know, there's somebody who holds the power in their hands, you know, to get things done, and holds a huge audience, you know, pretty much the audience of the world, and that if you could get the right words across to them and they, you know, believed in the cause, that they could actually talk to the entire world and say, look, there's this crazy guy named Shaziz that's got a lot of good ideas, and I think y'all ought to listen to it. But no, that's not going to happen. That's what we call a pipe dream. It's never going to happen. So the next best thing is to get you, build you a network, and start talking to the people. Just the people. The average Joe. People just like yourself. And try to get their ideas and opinions and understandings and, you know, see where we can go with it. So we reach out and we touch the world, all kinds of people from all over the globe. We talk to people from every nation. People just like us that have the same hopes and aspirations. So we know, for the most part, all of our leaders, presidents and kings and whatever throughout the entire world are pretty much off the table. They're not going to join us here at the table and have a conversation like we do every day. It's got to be us, we the people, that talk to each other. But as I'm on this journey and I'm looking around, I'm starting to notice a trend. There's this fascination out there with doomsday. People seem to, for one reason or another, be really fascinated with the end of the world. Now, in some senses, I could probably understand why. Because if the world is messed up in your general vicinity, your neighborhood, your community, you're probably looking for a reset, a restart. You want this world to just, might as well wipe it all out, start all over. And that's what some of the supposed secret societies of the world believe, that we can have a global reset. We'll blow it all up, we'll run down in underground bunkers, and we'll rough out the deal when the air's fresh up on the top again. We'll come back out again. So supposedly all over this planet and throughout history, people have been building massive cities and buildings and things underground. The average Joe building doomsday bunkers in their yard because they believe that the global elite have this plan that they're going to one day, you know, just up and implement this plan and wipe out the world and kill off all the population, and suddenly we're all, you know, going to be gone, and they're going to be hiding up under the bunkers. And the average Joe who has a plan has their own bunker. Doomsday preppers is what they call them. But this fascination with doomsday and all the different possibilities, all the different scenarios, there's lots of videos out there where you can go around and you can watch all the potential ways that the earth could be destroyed and be war, or, you know, some massive solar flare, or some massive rock, or even Planet X comes in and flips us upside down, or pole shift, or, you know, you name it. I've seen them all. So a lot of people are fascinated with doomsday. They're fascinated with death and destruction and apocalyptic scenarios playing out. I gotta admit, I watch a lot of doomsday videos out there, you know, stories about how when something like that comes about, that the average Joe will pull together and they will overcome all the adversities and stuff like that. And I guess for me, it's just a kind of a curiosity of how people would react or work together in the worst case scenarios. But in the long term, you're actually missing out on so much potential. Spend all the time in the world trying to prepare for some apocalyptic doomsday scenario, worrying about what's gonna, you know, come and get you or whatever. And to some extent, I think a lot of that's put out there to keep the average Joe living in fear. Living in fear of the unknown, never trying to take that extra step and go forward to see how far that you can actually take your individual life. How far could you go if you really focused your life and really had the drive and the energy and wanted to do so? How far could you go with your life? That's a big question. Most of the people that I meet these days are usually tired, including myself. I'm tired. I spent a lot of time doing these radio shows. And I spent a lot of time doing research and talking to people and trying to maintain my own family and my land and stuff. A lot of time and energy. Sometimes I wish I could go back to a time in my life when I didn't know anything. When I had no idea that the world was even remotely messed up. When there was a sense about I was invincible and 10 foot tall and bulletproof. But in reality, it never was the case. I never was 10 foot tall and bulletproof. I was just living by the luck and the grace of God to stay alive, I guess. It was a miracle. But I've been down a lot of roads, a lot of dark roads. I've seen a lot of things. Like I said many times on this show, I've seen things that no man or woman should ever have to see. Some terrible things. Some things that you just don't want to talk about. But if I'm just one person out of 9 billion people on this planet, I can only visualize, I can only imagine what the rest of the people of the world would be going through at the same time. Some folks just get so discouraged, they just decide, well, you know, it just isn't worth it anymore. It's too much. And when you talk about hopes and dreams and futures and making the world a better place, and people look out into the world, and most part, they always say, well, they are not going to let you do this. You'll never get this done. The elite of the world are going to hold you back. There's no way that you will ever get anything accomplished. And it's always the notorious they that always have the power, and it's never the we that have the power. It's always the they. Who exactly are they anyway? They say the President of the United States, he don't even really have power, that he's just a puppet, and they have the power. We know there's international global bankers throughout the world that have money, and the old saying about he who has the gold makes the rules. But in reality, you got one person standing over there outside the box, shouting inside the box and saying, look, you know, it's like that video, the dots. You know, there's only a few of them, and there's millions of you. And if you ever got tired of living in fear and worrying about doomsday, And if you ever gathered together in your communities and come together with all the ideas and research that you've acquired throughout your entire lives, you could actually see real change in the world. You wouldn't have to worry about nothing. The average Joe has a lot of power. The average Jane has a lot of power. Joe and Jane, there's two little words right there. I don't know. But that's the phrase. But anyway, I hope you get my point. A lot of doomsday scenarios out there, a lot of political scandals, a lot of crime and corruption. You know, the good book says in the last days there'd be wars and rumors of wars, plagues and famines and pestilence and so on. Paul Harvey in 1965 explained the world that we live in today. And now that the world's all in such a disarray, and now that doomsday is the top subject on people's minds, and people look out there and they see and they hear all this stuff and they think, well, you know, it's just too messed up. We'll never be able to fix it. We just got to ride the storm out. We just got to sit back and wait for it to happen. Well, I don't believe that we have to sit back and wait for it to happen. And even though I talk about my good book, I don't think that everything in that book is written in stone, that it has to come to be. I don't think there has to be plagues and famine and wars and rumors of wars and all that. I don't think doomsday has to come about. Now, some people that are of the same faith as me that would say otherwise. But in reality, you know, it would not make my God a liar if we chose to exercise all the gifts and the powers that we've got available to us and the resources, and we fix this world. Wouldn't make them a liar, because we would make them proud. Now, personally, I don't know who or what you believe the higher power of the universe or how this planet came to be. But we're all kind of like floating around in this boat. There's lots of us. There's 9 billion of us. We're floating around in this boat, whether it be in space or just on some flat plane that some people believe. Doesn't matter. We're all in the same boat. And you got some crazies over there poking holes in the boat. And you got other people that are telling them to stop it, you know, and they're trying to plug the holes. Meanwhile, you know, with all the chaos going on, people have overlooked the simple. When this boat goes down, we all go down with it. It's not going to be something spectacular from a doomsday scenario. And if it is, what are you going to do about it? We're just people. The destruction that we've got coming our way, it's literally man-made. Because we were given choices to decide our destiny. We can go out there and we can maintain the beauty of the oceans and the rivers and the streams, the lakes. Or we can allow them to be polluted. We can throw our trash, make it worse. So, regardless of how we end up coming about, nobody ever gets up and cleans house. Essentially, we're all floating around in a trash can now, the equivalence of a dumpster. So when doomsday gets here, it's going to be a slow grind process. We're all going to like kind of live through how it gets worse and worse and worse until finally it's just so bad, it's just pointless. Now, I don't know whether or not doomsday will ever show up. Seems like every single time they put a date on doomsday that something happens and it moves, the date moves. Doomsday is always like a, you know, you started off with Y2K and worked your way out to World War III and everything else. I've even talked about the potential of World War III because all the signs and everything that people were saying, you know, in the world and on the international stage was pointing towards conflict between, you know, the Russians and the Chinese and the Koreans and the Americans and Europeans and all this, you know. All of it looked like, you know, a potential apocalyptic nuclear power doomsday. Now I put my voice out there in the world, it's only because I feel like words of wisdom need to be spoke, even if they're not heard. Maybe someday somebody will hear them. Maybe someday the light will come on in their head and they'll say, wait a second. Yeah, I heard that once. I think we can do this thing. There have been a lot of funerals in my lifetime, and I've seen families crying, and the one thing that resonates in my head the most every time I go to one of those funerals is, why does it take a tragedy to bring a family together? Rest of the time, people are all doing their own thing, living their own lives, and going about their own business, and having their own little feuds amongst each other. I'm not talking to you because you made me mad or whatever. And then, when somebody important in the family passes on, everybody gathers together to lay them to rest, and the family actually comes together for a moment. That's a sad thing. When you look out into this world and you think about how all these people of the world are pretty much doing the same exact thing. Unless there's a natural or a man-made disaster, communities don't come together. I know that the potential of the heart is in every single living soul on this planet. And if they ever decided to use that tool to the world's advantage, imagine what we could do. Imagine the adversities that we could overcome together. So that's the hope and dream that keeps the Mad Science and the Knights of the Round Table show alive. Because until it's over, it's not over. Until it's proven to be trying to find the words. Until there ain't one single thing that can be done or said. Until it is so blatantly obvious that the world is coming to an end. Until the very last sun ray of light hits this earth. Then I think that we still have a chance. You know, I can talk and plead and beg the world to come to some sort of understanding and find some sort of middle ground and work together. There are people out there that are doing it. There's people all over the planet with you know, plans and trying to put together things and trying to do the best that they can and try to make the world better for people. But they're outnumbered by the people that are not trying to do anything to make the world better. most folks walk through life just like I used to when I was younger. Haphazardly just kind of going wherever the wind blows. It's just a whatever's fine, let's go. And don't worry about things, people or places. And unless it lands in their yard, it's not even an issue. It's amazing to me how many stories are going through how many minds and what they see, their perception of the world, what it is. Some people, they go to church once or twice a week. And they put all the all their worries on the table, rest it out to they leave it to God. And that's good enough for them. But for me, it's not good enough for me to just lay all my burdens at the Creator's feet. I think that with the talents and gift that I have been given, then I need to be out there and I need to be doing some work. And if my work's as simple as giving a speech or talking, pointing out things, sharing information, if that's the best I got, then that's the best I got to give. Not for fame or fortune or notoriety or to show that I was right and everybody was wrong. No, because if I look out there and I see this planet, I'd kind of like to take care of it. You know, you ask anybody who has ever been poor in their lifetime about taking care of things and one another, you'll find that they appreciate things more whenever they had to work hard for them. They appreciated things whenever they received a gift or something, because they knew what it was like without it. Could you imagine what it would be like without this world? We could have been given a world of nothing but a desert. We could have been born into a world of nothing but struggles, with no light at the end of the tunnel and no hope of any better days. We could have been given that. But instead, our Creator, whoever or whatever designed and put all this system together in place for us, gave us something so beautiful, so profound. Just handed it over to all of us people. Told us to go out there and be fruitful and multiply. That's amazing. And so for me, I'm thankful. I'm thankful to have actually had the chance to be a part of things. Not thankful for some of the things that I've seen in life, but even those have defined me the way that I am today. The person that I am today is because of some of the things that I've seen and had to go through. The trials and tribulations and nightmares and atrocities that I had to bear witness to. Ironically enough, I was born the same year that Paul Harvey was saying what he was saying. He was talking about the world and how it would come to be. And I got here just at the right time to take that ride all the way up till the modern day today. From 1965 to 2017, I went that roller coaster. I took that ride, that journey through life. And I seen it all. I seen everything that he talked about. I was born the year that he said all that. Coming to the world, and I don't know whether I was innocent or what. But every bit of word that he said in the prophetic vision that he talked about, I lived it. I saw it all. And I think to myself, you know, for a child to have to go through all that, all the way till the time they become a teenager to an adult, there's something really wrong with that picture. Now, even though I went down a path that I would never suggest anybody ever try, I still believe there's a lot of people who took that same exact road. And I know there's people out there in this world right now that are suffering in all different forms and fashions. And there's people out there in this world that are taking advantage of the weak and doing the things that they do. So, in some sense, you look back, you step back, you look at the big picture, and you think maybe the global elite have a point. Maybe because the world is this way, maybe we need to bring about a doomsday. Clean house and start all over again. But the souls that would be left behind after such an ordeal, knowing that you lived and you were part of a scenario that played out that wiped out the majority of the population of the world, how could you live with that stain on your heart forever? The ends don't justify the means. The better case scenario would be that the elite finally realize that doomsday is not the solution. That finding people out there of like minds that really want to resolve the issues of the world and gathering together on masses and fixing things. You'd be surprised at how many people would be willing to help if they thought there was hope of change. Real change, not the change the politicians want to talk about. The hope of humanity finally one day getting it, realizing it. We lay down our guns, we lay down our swords, and we lay down all of our grievances and our anger, and we decide to walk forward into the future and begin to pave the roads for future generations to be able to live in peace and harmony on a world that is just so incredibly beautiful. As these words are coming out of my mouth, you know, I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, yeah, oh, maybe all those folks that keep telling me that it can't never happen are right. Maybe those folks that say that man is nothing more than an animal or whatever, maybe they're right. But if I'm to agree with that, then that means I have to give up on the dream. And because I see the potential of what could be in this future, what this world could be like, I'm not willing to give up on that dream. I'd rather be that one crazy, insane person that keeps repeating the same thing over and over and over again, only to fail. And at least at the other side of the road, be able to say that I tried. I gave it everything I had. I believe that this world could be so amazing. Here on Shazoo's Radio Network and TCT and Haggy Shack and all the different networks that we're affiliated with, there's people out there that believe it too. They believe it enough to take their own personal time out and their own personal funds and keep the ball rolling. to keep preaching to the choir, so to speak, to keep talking to the world, trying to guide them, be the lighthouse on the side of the storm shores, on the stormy seas or whatever. I wrote a letter to the president. Never got a response. Three prior presidents, I got one of them, I got an email, and two of them I actually got a letter back from. But they say it's one of those pretty much stamped on signatures and generic thank you for your message, ain't interested in what you got to say kind of thing. So I realize that there's no way that we're ever going to get any kind of results via the governments of this world. It's going to require the average Joe to choose to make this world better and then make it so. We've got access to technologies that can make it so. We've got access to brilliant minds all over the world. And before the notorious they step in and try to shut us all down, we need to build it all up. Sky Blue said, man is animal is black propaganda. Man is made in the image of God. Thus, somebody scrolled up on me. I didn't get to read it all. Anyway, I understand what he's saying. Thus, you have free choice and do not run just on instinct. So, he's right. Because in my book of faith in Genesis, it talks about man was created in God's image. Which makes us creators. We create our own pain. We create our own suffering. We create our own destiny. We choose our own path. And when I say we, I mean we in our personal lives, we as communities. You know, there's always a right way and a wrong way to do things. Most generally, it ends up being done the wrong way because people get frustrated because they see no results going on. So it's like, well, if I don't get my way, we're going to fight, you know. No justice, no peace. That phrase just drives me insane. No justice, no peace. Think about that. So they're willing to keep a war going on just to get their way, and in the process, more people get hurt. No justice, no peace. I wonder which one of the brilliant candles from the box actually had that bright idea. You can't go around and burn down your own communities and steal from your own shopkeepers and your people of your communities and hurt each other and expect things to get better in this world. You know, I know people are probably tired of hearing it, but if I say something crazy like, you know, it don't make no sense to protest save the trees with a wooden stick and a paper sign, to me it's only common sense. You need to get out there in the world and you need to plant some trees. You need to clean up your streams and your lakes and your neighborhoods and work together with each other. Once again, there are people out there, there's lots of groups out there that are doing good in this world. But they need your help. They need you to volunteer. They need you to go out in your communities and find out where the needs are and make something happen. You know, presidents, congressmen, and senators, they can pass laws. They can tell you what's illegal and what ain't illegal. But when it comes down to doing the right thing, ultimately it's up to you. It's not up to the government whether you decide to be a decent person and fix your world. It's never really been up to the government. See, the folks that are in charge of the government, it's kind of like who you know and what you know, that kind of thing. The power structure. You think all these rich people go getting into the Congress and the Senate and the government, you know, just because they care about the people? I'm sure there's a few senators and congressmen and even presidents that might have had honorable intentions. But if you're a corrupt industry or a corrupt organization or even a crime boss, you want to get your hands in the government. You want to get your hands in the police departments and everything. You want to try to basically be able to have power to do whatever it is. You know, if you look out there in society, you'll see different levels of society and different levels of power and the power struggles that goes on. People greed and whatever. Sky Blue Eyes said, "No justice, no peace" is 1984 devil think because justice equates the compensation and forgiveness. You can't. Peace never came from the end of the barrel of a gun. And the saying is, you know, if you live by the sword, you're going to die by the sword. I don't understand why the world can't get that. I don't understand why the world even thinks that war would be a good thing. I can understand why military-industrial complexes would think war would be a good thing. I can understand why corporations would think war would be a good thing. Because when you go to war and you blow everybody's stuff up, somebody's got to come in and fix it. Somebody's got to sell the materials. Somebody's got to sell the food and the medicines and the band-aids and the guns and the bullets and the bombs. Somebody got to sell it. Somebody got to buy it. And so war is profitable for all those individuals out there who have the money and have the power. War is good for the economy. It's bad for the average Joe. Because if you notice how they do that, is they get the average Joe all patriotic, and then they tell you got to go out and you got to fight this battle because these boogeymans are coming to get us. Ever since I was a child, I remember there was a boogeyman behind every bush. There's a boogeyman coming down the road. There's an axe murderer, a mass murderer, or somebody who wants to kill you. And you gotta be safe, and you gotta go out and learn self-defense and buy weapons and all that kind of stuff. Then at the same sense, passing laws that say you can't buy weapons. You can't have this certain type of weapon. So, you're darned if you do and you're darned if you don't, what's it end up being? Because if you get you a weapon and you have to use it, then you end up going to jail and have to try to convince the world that you didn't do this on purpose. It wasn't pre-planned, that you just tried to defend yourself. So the system that we're contending with is a system that's stacked against the people. It's kind of like going into a casino. The odds are in the casino's favor that the casino's going to win. And the indoctrination is so bad that the majority of people you talk to that know the world needs to be fixed but don't believe it can because the notorious they won't allow it, all they can do is say that man is a sickness, a disease, a parasite, or an animal. And even though they may not be intending on painting with a wide brush, that's exactly what happens. And the more people that hear that, and more people that say, yeah, the world, all man's been doing all along is fighting and killing each other all along and tearing up the planet. That's all. Oh, I agree with you. That's it. There ain't no way we can fix it. I'm just going to live my life and do everything the best I can, and, you know, whatever happens, happens. And they ain't willing to step forward. And that is exactly what the people in charge of this world want you to do and say. They want you to be complicit. They want you to believe that there is no possibility to fix this world, that there is no possibility to stop the terrorists from tearing up your properties and killing your people. They want you to live in fear. And the doomsdayers, for some reason, will find excitement in their hearts, deep down in their souls, that as tragic as everything is, everybody's got to band together. We got to look out, go build a bunker, or let's find a place to hide. When in reality, if 9 billion people stand up against the machine, then we can shut that machine down. That's a tall order. Because those guys that have the guns, that know that even though they have the small numbers, they know that the average Joe, which is you, has been so incredibly indoctrinated to live in fear that they can herd you like cattle. They can herd you like sheep. All they got to do is kill one of your brothers and sisters, and you will live in fear, and you will do what you're told. Those are the people of the world that are the problem of the world. Those are the people of the world that are robbing and stealing our children's future. Those are the ones that you'll probably never be able to convince to do the right thing. Because they enjoy the power. They enjoy being number one in their communities. They enjoy being feared. Those are the notorious they. The leaders of all the crime syndicates, the leaders of all the gangs, the leaders of all the governments, the leaders of all the corporations. So they, from top to bottom, they're there. They're the ones willing to take advantage of the weak. They're the ones willing to steal and rob and rape and loot and do whatever it is, because they have no divine faith. They don't believe in any higher power. They only believe in what they want, and that they will do anything to get it. So when you hear a doomsday scenario out there, you're going to have to ask yourself whether or not there's an agenda behind this deal. Are they telling me that the world is in danger and about to die, and it's really so? Or are they telling me that the world is about to die so that they can sell me on an ideology or an agenda? If that be the case, then you have to watch their actions to find out. You have to see what they're doing. You know, when the governments of the world aren't focused on something, then it must not be as dramatic as the story was told. But you got to think about that. They're human too. They have families. And they see that the world is coming to an end and start rushing down in their bunkers. That should be a red flag. Yeah, we're going to run down in these arcs, and we'll see you guys. Good luck out there. Maybe everyone in the world should be building a bunker. The overall thing to me doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense how chaotic the world has become. Listening to what Paul Harvey said back in 1965 and knowing the path that I've seen in my lifetime, the journeys that I've been on, the man must have saw something. Because he saw it just as I had to live through it. Now here it is, year 2017, and some of the things that I was told on the way are still here today. There's somebody in this world starving. There's somebody in this world that's hungry. There's somebody homeless. There's somebody sick. And there's a lot of somebody's living in fear. Now, if I was the creator of this world, if I was God, I'd be saddened in my heart to see that my creations were just living the way that they do. Because I would want them to finally realize that if they took the time to utilize every bit of gift and talent that I had bestowed upon them, that they could be so much. We could do things. We could do amazing things. In my book of faith, it talks about that. Jesus said that if you had the faith of a mustard seed, you could move a mountain. That's just a tiny bit of faith. Tiny bit of faith, you could move a mountain. He told all these disciples out there that all these things that I do, you can do, and you will do greater things if you believe. And in my heart and mind, it doesn't even matter whether or not it was a fairy tale or just a story or something with a moral. It's that those are the things that I believe. I believe we can move mountains. I believe we can do great things. You know, when you have a friend or a significant other and their strengths become your weaknesses become their strengths and vice versa. And the two of you, you complement each other as a team. And you get things done. You succeed in life. You know, there's a lot of people that play baseball and other games like that. And there's a phrase that runs around in all the sports teams that says there's no I in the word team. Because together they go across that finish line. And I believe that together this world, the people of this world, could do something so amazing that those words that were written in the book about the last days would not have to come to pass. You know, there's a man in that book that asked God, said, if I go into this town and I find this many good people, will you spare the town? You spare the city? And the answer was yes. Two separate occasions, two separate towns. Sodom and Gomorrah. If I go in and I find this many people, will you spare this city? And the answer was yes. So why couldn't that same thing occur now? In the history. It wouldn't make God a liar. It would make God proud. To come back and find his creations. Had finally figured it out. What if this is the last opportunity for humanity? What if this is the last go? What if all the societies before or prior that had failed and been essentially erased themselves? And that the experiment is coming to an end. What if this is the very last time? And not even those elite hiding in their bunkers. What if this was it? I think that I have faith in humanity. I think that I have a love for this world and all the beauties that this world has. And so I'm not willing to lay down the evil. I'm not willing to give up on the dream. That's why I keep doing what it is I'm doing. That's why I keep asking you to bring other people of like mind to the table. I want to hear what they got to say. I want to hear what they believe. I want the world to understand that we're standing at a crossroads right now with an amazing opportunity to take this technology that we've got hold of right now and use it to spread the word far and wide across the land to every point on the compass. Because if there's a starving baby in this world, they need to be fed. If there's a war in this world, it needs to come to a close. Everything that we do to each other, we do to our Creator. He said, "What you do unto the least of me, you do unto me." And if you think about that, it's so true. Every time you hurt one of your brothers or sisters in this world, you hurt us all. And if you take every bit of what we are, then you can truly find our Creator right there. Because in the book of Genesis, it talks about man was created in our Creator's image. We're a piece of the puzzle. And when we hurt each other, when we destroy other pieces of the puzzle, we'll never be able to find our way back to where we belong. I think we can fix this world. And if you think we can fix this world, even if it is via this radio network here, even if it's via your own or another, it doesn't matter to me where you get information from, as long as it's good information and it's shared with honorable intent. It doesn't matter to me where you learn or who gets the credit. It matters to me that you take and use everything that you can potentially use to make your life so much better, to make those around you so much better. Because you're holding in your heart and your mind's gifts that are powerful tools that somebody in this world needs your help. You have the power to literally affect somebody's life for a better way. If you choose to use that power in a positive manner, and you're one of the ones that like to throw the positive pebbles in the pond, then you're part of the solution. You are the answer. So I don't know, I could sit here, and I've been told that I'm on a soapbox, been told that I'm on a rant, I've been told that I'm redundant, I've been told that so many things. But if the dream is that valuable, if the dream has any hope whatsoever, then it has to be said as many times and as loudly as possible. That's the only way that I can see anything could ever get done. I'm trying to find a song so I can take a music break. In hopes that maybe one of the Knights of the Round Table will show up. See, that's one thing about old King Shazizz the Terrible. I'm not going anywhere. And even if I had to sit here at this computer and talk to nobody whatsoever, doesn't matter. Because I'm going to say the words that are coming from my heart. I'm going to continue to say what I believe. I'm going to continue to preach the dream. I'm going to continue to talk about hope, ideas, and solutions that will be forever immortalized in a podcast that maybe someday at least one person will hear. And that one person may have the faith of a mustard seed. And that one person may actually be able to move the mountain that I'm trying to move. The mountain is we the people. And if my words can move you, I will be forever thankful and humbled and give the glory to my God. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table.
Crickets are singing and lightning bugs are floating on the breeze. Baby, get ready. Across the field where the creek turns back by the old stumble road, I'm gonna take you to a special place that nobody knows. Baby, get ready.
Consider. heavens above, more than just a passing glance. And when you get the choice to sit it out or dance, I hope you do. Whenever one door closes, I hope one more opens. Promise me that you'll give faith a fighting chance. And when you get the choice to sit it out or dance.
You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table. I've been joined by Honorable Knight Sky Blue Eyes, and in a second here I'm going to add Raymond to the call because apparently he wants in as well, so that's always good. The more the merrier. So what I was talking about essentially is something that come to my mind about doomsday and such. You know, it seems like sometimes today, modern day people, they kind of love to live in fear for some reason. I don't understand it, but that's the way that things seem to be. I mean, maybe it's a matter of being on a quest to overcome adversity or whatever. But I can tell you from personal experience that I spent a lifetime living in fear. You know, I've been down some roads that don't even really care to talk about. And I've seen things that I've talked to you folks about in the past. I've seen things that no man or woman should ever have to see. When I look out at this world, I don't see a world of chaos with my eyes or my heart. I hear the word chaos. I hear the world of chaos. I hear all the stories, the wars, rumors of wars, plagues, famines, and pestilence, and it brings concern to my heart. But when I look at this world, I see it in a different manner than I believe most folks in this world probably see. I see beauty. I see potential. I see a vast amount of resources that, if properly utilized, we could do so much. And I believe that, like I said in the deal about, if you ever listen to it, there's actually a copy of it on there. I might even play it before the day's out. But I talk about how we are the founding fathers, the mothers, the sisters, the brothers, aunts, uncles, and so on. We are the founding fathers of our children and our children's children's future. And so the path that I had to walk in order to get where I'm at today, the things that I had to see, the trials and tribulations, I would like to steer the future generation down a smoother path. I'd like to be one of the ones that puts one of the stepping stones in place that will give them a chance to walk a smooth path into their future. Give them the opportunity and the hope to believe in themselves and to believe in each other. See, I'm not ashamed to say that I'm willing to be a servant to my brothers and sisters, and I'm willing to humble myself and be a caretaker of the world like I should be. The things that I've seen in my life have taught me things, taught me how to be what it is that I believe that I am. And so with that said, you know, once your eyes is open to the real truth of what life is all about, there's no turning back. It's not something that you could just hide off in the closet and say, you know, no, I'm not going there because it's too much work. I don't have the vast resources to jump on jets or have trains move and materials and things brought to each other, people around the world that are in need. But what I do have is a voice that I can speak out and hopefully touch the hearts of somebody who will motivate them into helping somebody that might be sitting right next to them. We can't stand idly by and watch as our people of our brothers and sisters around the world suffer. I remember as a child seeing those commercials on TV that there was a starving baby in the world. There was a puppy being abused. There was a war. There was a homeless man. There was all kinds of things going on. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I'm 52 years old. I'm not the oldest person around. But I've been around long enough that I don't think that if somebody wanted to resolve an issue in the world that it would take no 30, 40, 50 years to do so. I may be three quarters through my life. I may be halfway through my life. I don't know. Nobody knows how long they have in this world. But after I've been blessed with all the things that I have been blessed with in my life, it's my turn to give back to the community. It's my turn to give back to the world, to our Creator, and to try to do something right. I probably should have been doing it all along, but I just didn't get it. I just didn't understand. The world was all about me. It revolved around me. What I could get. As long as I was happy, everything was fine. And when things went against me, I felt like, oh, poor me, the world is so terrible. But then I realized that as bad as my life was, it wasn't nowhere near as bad as some of the individuals that I heard the stories about. I do believe that we have the potential to resolve every single issue on this planet. I believe that we have every single tool, all the technology, and all the talents and the skills and the everything. The pieces of the puzzle are sitting right here on the table before us here at the Knights of the Round Table. Two wonderful pieces of the puzzle join me here today. One Sky Blue Eyes and one Raymond, both honorable Knights of the Round Table. It's that simple. You show up to the table to share to the world what's on your heart and mind and to pass information. We got Knights of the Round Table that show up in the chat room that send out pertinent links to help people out, to show them information, to everything from alternative energy to alternative medicine to things that are going on in the world that need to be addressed. And that's how we get it all started. You know, only a fool would go into the world or go into a battlefield with no plan. And so we're kind of sitting here, we're planning, we're getting it started, we're trying to get people motivated, we're motivating ourselves, we're helping one another in every manner that we can. And sometimes it's just to be that person that holds up like a crutch, helps the other guy keep standing while we're fighting this war against our minds and hearts. So with that said, Sky Blue, got any thoughts on your mind that you want to share with the world?
Yeah, sure. Hi, everybody. Hi, Shaz. Hi, Raymond. In your intro earlier, you mentioned, all the rumours of doom that they're saying, you know, all this carbon dioxide in this atmosphere will warm it up. Well, that's kind of proven to be a bit of a lie. but the point I'm making is that the controllers, and I'm going to use that expression loosely, the people in politics who push these ideas of global crises, they do it to control you, because whilst you live in fear, you will do whatever they say without actually going away and looking at the facts and understanding that the world is in no danger. It's been here for 5 billion years. It'll be here for another 5 billion years. The issue is, will mankind stay around for that length of time? Will we wipe ourselves out because of our own stupidity, because we listen to these idiots who are trying to control us? I say idiots, they're not really idiots, they're super genius, but they act like idiots to get away with the fact that they don't want to show their hand, that they are deceiving us for destruction.
Now what
I'm getting at is, you know, we have to look after mankind is in danger. The world is not. Do not fear for the earth. The earth can take care of itself. It's been doing it for billions of years. It'll do it for billions of years longer. You know, even if we blow ourselves off the face of the planet will still be here. It'll be very, very different and inhospitable to life. Mankind will severely suffer from it, but life will get a grasp somewhere and cope. But yeah, mankind won't.
Yeah, you.
Okay.
You're right.
So
you raise a valuable point.
Don't fear. Yeah. Don't concern yourself with the planet. You know, if you're an environmentalist whose sole goal is to say that mankind is the enemy, it isn't the enemy. I have no enemies. People may not like me, but they're still not my enemy. you know, what I'm getting at is environmentalists who are so concerned with the planet have this black propaganda brainwashing that mankind is some form of virus. It's not true. We, if given the opportunity, can benefit our environment. You know, it's the corporations that do all the damage, not man itself. The corporation acts like it's mankind because it needs men to run it, but their sole goal is to make money. So strip mining and clear cutting, you know, it's all for profit. It's not for benefit. But a lone forester, right, he takes care of the woods. You know, he takes out the dead brushwood to prevent forest fires, etc., etc. So, you know, individuals, people, take care of their environment. After all, their environment looks after them.
You know, sorry to cut you off, but you made a brilliant point just a second ago about the lone and man out there, you know, cleaning out the woods and stuff like that. When people go to parks and nature parks, they don't really never, you know, very often see the man behind the scenes that's cleaning out everything, that's picking up the trash that people left behind. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. This is why I say it's generally the lone individual that's actually looking after the environment. They live there. They go into the woods every day and see what's going on in the world. You know, we weekend tourists that go to the woods, hey, we don't follow any trails to see, oh, look, there's been deer down here or whatever. Maybe we do because we're hunting them, but that's another story. But what I'm getting at is that, nature takes care of itself, right?
Yep.
We don't really need to concern ourselves with nature. We have to focus on who is trying to control us, right? Right through,
Anybody that doesn't believe that nature can take care of itself, wipe out an entire county, fence it off, and see what happens 10 years later. It's like man was never there.
Yeah, exactly. Nature, you know, we'll just retake whatever. Yeah, reclaim. That's the word I was looking for. Throw me off my point there. Where was I at?
I lost track myself. But both brilliant points.
You know, I can show you two pieces of road, asphalt road, that was abandoned about 10, 12 years ago, within 5 miles of my house. And so help me, you can go out there with a foot digger, you cannot find that asphalt. I mean, nature will reclaim it. There's bacteria and anodes and whatever in the soil that will actually eat and digest asphalt.
Well, that's one of the things.
Yeah, it's
Sorry.
It's incredibly good like that. For instance, the Incas and the Aztecs, you know, in the forests of the rainforests of South America, you know, those cities are still being discovered today because the forest has reclaimed these huge, huge cities that used to exist. But as soon as the civilizations disappeared, the forest reclaimed it, and they disappeared out of history. And yet, people are still discovering cities that have been reclaimed. I remember the point I was making before. What's going on in the world, and has always been going on, is that you've got the controllers, and I use that word loosely, prior to the invention of politicians, we had priests. You know, I'm not dismissing religions as such, but once they become organized, then there are controlling influences. And it's the same with politicians. Their sole purpose is to control man's destiny by instilling propaganda. And environmentalism is the biggest propaganda, the propaganda tool that they've got. Even Adolf Hitler was his propaganda was environmentalism. You know, do you love your country? Well, you know, fight for it. You know, what was it called? Lebensraum, living room. You know, capture Poland and then we can move in there, etc., etc. But the point I'm making is that environmentalism isn't just a tool of control. You see, humanity and those that control humanity are fighting in opposite directions. Mankind wants its freedom, and the controllers want total control. So they will manipulate you in any shape, form, or fashion to get their control by imposing laws to say that you cannot do this no longer because it's bad for the environment. You know, if they truly wanted to stop damage to the environment, then they should go after the corporations and not the people. So that's my biggest issue with environmentalism. It's just a tool of control. I mean, for instance, if we look at Greenpeace, Greenpeace started out with the sole goal of trying to save the whale. You know, that's very good and very commendable. I mean, the whale, it's got a right to live on this planet. It was here before mankind was, so it should still be here even after mankind decides to wipe itself out. But the point I'm making is that Greenpeace is no longer as it was in a true grassroots environmental movement, because the late David Rockefeller bought it out by making a huge donation, and the Greenpeace leaders at that time weren't that politically astute or politically aware, so there was major mismanagement of the money that Rockefeller donated. He basically claimed foul and said, well, you're mismanaging my money, even though he'd give it to them, and thus instituted a new change in management and brought his own communist managers who ousted out the original founders and put in a bunch of communists who now work for the oil companies and the sole purpose of Greenpeace is to block competition for Standard Oil and all those oil company derivatives, so that certain oil companies are left alone and other oil companies are totally blocked. And that's Greenpeace. You know, they don't actually no longer go after real environmental issues. And you ask a Greenpeace worker, hey, if you look up in the sky there, do you see those trails left by that plane? What are they? And they have no idea. Contrails, plane pollution, you know. Well, you know, you explain it to them and then they'll click. And then you say, well, why doesn't Greenpeace focus on that? Because they're not aware of it, you know. That's what they'll tell you, even though the heads of Greenpeace probably have been attacked on this issue thousands of times, but just ignore it. Because obviously the oil companies sell aviation fuel, so they ain't going to go after that one, are they? But there's my little rant, and back to you, Shaz and Raymond.
Well, no, these chemtrail things, I haven't heard anybody say that they have actually themselves checked into it and know for sure that they're burning chemicals in jet fuel that makes these trails. I do remember seeing in videos and movies of World War II, before jets were even invented, that the big bombers would be flying through the air. It was so high that the heat from the engines would cause the clouds to condense and they would leave a chemtrail.
The
contrail, it's gone since 1986. I mean, if you look at the sky now, currently, today, it's a light pale blue. I remember as a child, the sky was a rich dark blue, but it's pale blue now, you know.
The thing is,
there you go.
Now places like NASA and stuff like that admit to doing experiments. The government even has documentation out there. There's companies out there that actually advertise that they do geoengineering. So, you know, it's not science fiction anymore. It's science fact. They really do spray stuff in the sky. They did it in Vietnam, and they called it. Well, they call it now Agent Orange, but what was going on was, in Vietnam, they wanted to kill off all the plant life so the enemy wouldn't have any place to hide. So they sprayed chemicals across there that was basically killing off the plants, which in turn caused a lot of long-term health effects for the veterans that came back. So it's not the first time in history that governments of the world had done things without the consent of the people, under the guise of, you know, either winning a war or, you know, safety, health and safety. You know, they run all kinds of experiments. And those are things that the average person needs to be up on. And organizations with the power, such as Greenpeace, should be on board with trying to get down to the truth. You know, if it's just regular jet trails, then they get down there and they find the truth and they do a documentary on it and they ease everybody's worries about it. But nonetheless, even if it goes back to being just a conspiracy theory or a doomsday scenario, all these stories that you hear from every single direction while you're on the internet or on the TV are stories that instill fear in your heart for your safety and your family's safety. And we've been living this way as a people of this world for so long because of the people that are in charge, that there's got to come a time that the average Joe has to say enough is enough, and instead of living their lives in fear, take every bit of advantage of all the technologies to bring to light the truth of what's really occurring in this world. There's a guy that, you know, the whole Fukushima thing was going on, and everybody was saying that, you know, we were going to die. The oceans were dying off, and there wasn't no fish in the tidal pools, and the radioactivity was making it to the shorelines of America all the way from Japan. Well, this guy worked in the nuclear industry throughout his time in life. And so he literally took two separate Geiger counters and went all the way over to where they said it was coming in and did videos on it, took measurements, and showed everybody, you know, the truth. And that's the kind of thing that needs to be done. If there is a situation like chemtrails, there's people out there that are researching into it, trying to get to the bottom of what's being sprayed and who's doing what and where. But the whole point of all that is that the people are the only solution out there. The governments of the world, the corporations, the supposed representation, and even your local law enforcement. They're working with a system that pretty much is controlled by whoever has the biggest amount of money, whoever has the political power, special interest groups of the world. It's not controlled by the average Joe. If there's something that aggravates you and you want to call up your congressman or senator, you might get lucky and get through to them. But if you ever decide you want to call up the man in charge, say the president of the United States, they're going to tell you the same exact thing they told me. He's not available. And how many times can you be told he's not available before you just turn around and walk away and give up? We are available. We the people, there's 9 billion people on this planet. If there's somebody starving in this world, out of those 9 billion people on this planet, somebody has to live close enough to where if they had the resources available to them, that they could go over and they could feed that starving baby or help to teach somebody how to grow crops and fish and that kind of stuff.
What happened to our Peace Corps?
I have no idea. I mean, there's a lot of organizations
that's
out there.
A good thing. I mean, really good. College students go over to another country, take technology, not technology, but knowledge of technology, knowledge of growing crops, knowledge of land erosion through water and wind, and teach these people. And every time, the people benefit. What happened to that? Oh, it's a bad thing. But we do away with it, right?
on something you said there about getting in touch with the man in charge. Hey, now we're in the digital age. Donald Trump has a Twitter account. You can send him a Twitter. You know, maybe he'll spend some time and actually get down to one of the 65,000 hits he gets every day and read your little message.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can avoid the secretary and go direct straight to his Twitter account.
Yep, that's about the only hope there, and hopefully he'll see it. But you know, I like I said, I put that message to the president out there, and never got a response. And it was basically talking about there are people out here, brilliant minds all over the world, that are willing to step forward and help solve problems, and you know, that kind of stuff. But you know, in reality, he's probably got too much stuff on his plate. So to speak. I mean,
for sure. I mean, this is the nature of politics. You know, when you're the man at the top, right? Everyone just dumps on you. What do? You can only focus on what's most important. You know, you can delegate it out, but the nature of politics now is that who can you trust? You know, sorry to go on this political rant, but you know, Donald Trump voted on a campaign that everybody wanted, but if nobody who he is in charge of listens to him, what can he do? You know, he can't do it himself. He needs people to follow his orders. If they're not going to follow his orders, what can he do?
Yeah.
He can fire them and replace them, but this still doesn't necessarily mean that the job's going to get done, because those people that he puts in charge have to rely on other people. If they're not going to do what, you know, you end up with absolutely everybody fired, and just Donald Trump at the top saying, well, who's left to hire?
See, that's the brilliant point.
Here's my man, Shaz.
That's a brilliant point. I gave this example one time that the capstone of the pyramid, which, you know, maybe you could be the president of the United States or whatever, is only as powerful as the foundation that holds that pyramid up, you know? And if the people at the bottom decided one day, you know, I'm just done with this entire system, and everybody went in all four points of the, you know, globe or whatever, compass, flat earth or whatever it is you believe it is, it doesn't matter what shape it the world is, it matters what shape the world is in. If everybody decided to go off in different directions and start working on this world and actually doing things, You know, if you get out there in your local streams and you clean something up, then you lessen the likelihood of doomsday polluting us out of existence. And essentially, that's what's going to happen. We're going to pollute ourselves out of existence. It's the example of the fishbowl, you know. Unless there's some sort of outside influence putting fresh water in that bowl and keeping it down, then the fish inside there will basically pollute itself into non-existence anymore. And that's exactly the doomsday.
Aquaponics works.
Huh?
That is exactly how aquaponics works.
Yeah?
You put fish in a big aquarium. You take the water, you pump it over your plants. Your plants eat the poop and the urine and this, that, and another, keeping the water clean.
Yeah.
Using an outside force, but at the same time, you're growing food, vegetables, and fish.
Well, that's the brilliance of what Sky Blue mentioned earlier, was the fact that this earth isn't the one that's in danger. It's we, the people, because we live in a self-contained biosphere of epic proportions. There's more resources on this planet than we'll ever be able to use in a trillion lifetimes. And, you know, sure, we may make this planet inhabitable for us, but this planet is designed to be a self-contained, self-cleaning machine of what I consider biblical proportions. And
yes,
if it was ever utilized properly, we could literally bring about a heaven on earth. I mean, if you just think about it, go out to some of the neighborhoods where people have gardeners and caretakers that, you know, groundskeepers that keep the property, you know, pristine. It looks beautiful and it's comfortable to be on and it just looks so wonderful. That's because they, you know, A, had the money to pay people to do the work, but most thing is it's an example of what could be done, you know, even if people had to just volunteer to do so, you know.
What you're talking about, cleaning up and waste and rubbish and so forth, the city of Norfolk, Virginia spent billions of dollars to build a gasification plant that would take the city's sewage waste and turn it into methane gas. Then they spent more billions of dollars and converted every city vehicle. Every city vehicle was converted to run on methane gas. Well, they only kept the thing open like 5, 6, 7 years, and they closed it down. You know what their excuse was?
No.
It was so corrosive, it cost more to keep it open and run it than it was worth. And that is bull hockey, because there are steel pipes in the ground carrying methane gas from house to house that's been there for 40 and 50 years.
Yeah. So
they claim to spend millions of dollars every year just to... I mean, they tried everything. Stainless steel. They tried PVC. This, that, look. Methane gas does not hurt PVC. It does not hurt stainless steel.
Well, and I guess that brings me to my point of this particular episode of the show, was the fact that there's a lot of doomsdayers, there's a lot of naysayers, there's a lot of people that say you can't do something. Oh, this can't be done, that can't be done. And that type of mindset was beat in our head from the time that we were born till the time that we die. We're told that you can't do this, there's a regulation against that, there's a rule against this, or whatever. But if you know in your heart, running solar power is basically making the power grid not have to work as hard, and you're saving yourself some money, and you can do this in a clean fashion, then what's wrong with running solar power? And when your governments of the world are telling you things like, well, you know, because you're using solar power, you're not using the deal, we're going to have to tax you so we can offset that loss for the company so the company don't go under and everybody else can have
it. That is a political lie.
Sure it is.
It's a political lie. The same as Norfolk, Virginia, when they closed down the methane treatment plants that treated city sewage, it was a lie. A pure, bold-faced lie, because somebody's son, nephew, cousin, or whatever got some kind of a gasoline contract. That's all. It was a bold-faced, out-and-out lie.
Do you know that the biggest hindrance to the whole entire structure that we call our government, that's supposed to be our representation, are people that will misrepresent themselves. There's a term that they call RINO. It says Republican in name only. And I'm not advocating for either side, Republican or Democrat, as far as that goes, because the system has been around so long that, I got this saying, you can't walk through a cesspool and come out the other side smelling like a rose. So just about everybody up there is tainted in one way or another, slightly corrupt or whatever. But nonetheless, hold on a second before I lose my thought. Nonetheless, that system, the way that it's set up, isn't going to take away the doomsday scenario. Isn't going to take away the fear that you live in. The only way to get around that, and all the naysayers and all the propagandists and all the doomsdayer type scenarios, is to realize that the only solution that we've got is that we, the people, get up off our couches and go out there and do something positive for this world. That's it. There's no way. Grandpa used to say it best. He said, if you want something done, you got to get up and do it yourself. Well, there's 9 billion people on the planet that are being guided and mistreated by a small majority of the people. It's not the leaders of the world that go to war and are standing on the battlefield shedding their blood for patriotism or whatever. It's your children. It's your brothers and your sisters that are out there on them battlefields. And the war is a continuous, perpetual, never-ending cycle of death and violence and destruction. But in the process of doing that, somebody's making a lot of money. And that somebody isn't you. That somebody isn't the average Joe.
On that note, Chaz, you know, you mentioned that the problems with politics in America, right? And from an outsider, obviously, I don't live in America, but when I see American politics, it's really blatant what the problem is, and it's what you call lobbying, right? The rest of the world calls that bribery and is illegal, you know, but when it's called lobbying, it's called perfectly legal, and anyone can bribe their senator, representative, counselor, you know. Here's some money, send that contract my way, right?
Yeah.
If you did that in this country, openly and publicly, both people involved, both parties, the one who took the money and the one who offered that money, would be arrested and charged with a crime.
Just you know? Like you mentioned.
I'm not saying it doesn't go on anywhere else, but they just don't call it lobbying and make it legal.
Just like you mentioned Greenpeace and how it isn't like it used to be, because the same thing, the reason why I said the word RINO is because there's a deal, the word called infiltration, where if you want to either manipulate a group of people or you want to destroy them from the inside out, you go over there under whatever tag that they're wearing and you act like one of them and you steer them in the wrong direction. This is a tactic that's been used in war, you know, via spies, you know, or instigators, people that go into foreign countries and pick a fight with somebody and make it look like the guy, other guy over there did it, you know, the Jerry Springer effect.
Right.
And that's what we're up against. And so we need to out them people when we see them. We need to point them out. Look, he's the one over there instigating this deal. We're over here trying to paint this fence, make it look beautiful for everybody, and everybody, he's on the other side painting it a different color, you know, making it look terrible. You see what I'm saying?
Actually, he's being an infiltrator and dropping red paint into white paint to give you the pinko effect.
Yeah.
Dark commies.
That's what we're up against. And it's going to take the average Joe to understand that's the kind of evil that we're standing against. The evil that don't care about your hopes and dreams. It cares about its wallet. It cares about how fat you can get it. You know, you keep feeding the beast and the beast keeps getting bigger and you keep being worried and complained and living in fear. every time I hear a doomsday type scenario, I have to, you know, balance it out. I have to hear a solution to that doomsday. What can we do to resolve this issue? Folks, if there's some sort of planet that is coming into our solar system, like the whole Planet X deal, if it's coming into our planet and it's going to smash into our planet, there is absolutely nothing we can do about it at this point in the game, because we haven't utilized our technology to get out there and steer this thing off and, you know, build a giant ping pong paddle or something and slap it back the other direction or whatever. We're just not there, but we could be there. And so the whole question of all the possibilities of doomsday, you gotta look at the big picture. Is it something you can actually do something about? You know, our polluted planet, we can do something about it. We can assist nature in cleaning it up. We have the tools and the technology. We know how nature deteriorates stuff. We can fix it, all right? We can fix this world. We can fix homelessness. We can fix starvation. We can set this world up to where everybody has a chance at a decent life. It's not beyond the realms of possibility. It's an overwhelming task because it's been allowed to, over the generations, deteriorate to such a manner that it looks impossible and you're told it's impossible. The people that are out there preaching the whole global warming say, oh, you know, within so many years, the planet's going to heat up and the sea levels are going to rise. Well, it's been past their time frame and it hasn't happened yet. All right? Y2K didn't wipe out the world. All the different doomsday scenarios never came to pass. And next thing you know, here's another doomsday. The doomsday clock's been moved back. It's been moved forward. You know, it's always something to keep you worried about the boogeyman that's either under the fence, over the bushes, or whatever. Under the bushes or over the fence or around the corner. And what you do is go out and you spend resources and money and time and your own personal heart. It's tormenting to the average human to have to live like that. And it's time that it stops.
Yeah, it is the issue, Shaz, because you're hitting the nail right in the head, right? And the issue is that whilst we live in fear, we make bad decisions because we're not thinking clearly. Every time we are in some form of fear, it doesn't matter, you know, even the minor fear, you know, you hesitate and you just make a wrong decision, right? And this has been going on for years, decades, a lifetime, centuries, thousands of years. They put us in fear, you know, fear of your neighbors, fear of the neighboring countries, fear of other countries, and you go to war because you're in fear and you're not thinking clearly, when all you had to do was just stop, focus on what the problem is, and talk. You know, hey, you know, if somebody's coming to mug you, you know, you talk to him, and if he's determined to mug you, then you fight. But you have to talk, and in that process of talking, you can either calm the situation or put yourself in a better position to disarm him and hurt him. But I digress. I'm a peace-loving guy, but
I understand what you're saying, though. Your point is well taken. I understand exactly what you're saying. I mean, if you go and look at the Boy Scouts, their motto is supposed to be always be prepared. And that's what the average Joe should already have, you know, always be prepared. We go out and buy insurance for, you know, things that maybe your house burns down or your car, you crash your car or you get sick. And so we buy insurance, but we never insure ourselves with knowledge that could, benefit us in worst type scenarios. There's a lot of people that go through life just kind of like haphazardly, just tiptoeing through the tulips, and suddenly when a tragedy occurs, it's all poor me, I don't know what to do. Well, of course you don't, because you weren't paying attention. We're pointing it out right now.
You've hit on another one, Shaz. Insurance, right? That's a freaking scam, right? Politicians are our insurance, right? What I'm getting at here is that if you remember a time when insurance was non-compulsory with a car.
Yeah.
Right? Those who were uninsured drove far more carefully than those that had insurance.
Yeah.
Right? Because the moment you get insurance, you know, what's the matter if I smash my car up? I'm insured.
Yeah.
I get another one. You know, but if you're not insured, you look left and right at every stop junction before you set off. You know, you had your own responsibility, you know.
Yep.
If you don't get house insurance, you make sure you stub out every cigarette properly in that ashtray.
Yeah, unplug things, shut things
off. The cooker is turned off and all your electrics are good, right? Because you were responsible. So what I was getting at with politicians are our insurance, right? We trust them because they're our insurance. They are there to do us good. And that's not the case. They're not our insurance. They're our doom, you know? Because they want to screw you over every opportunity, you know? That's why your insurance prices constantly go up every single year.
Yep.
It's compulsory now, so they can screw you.
It's back clear. He said, the best insurance is knowledge.
Yep.
The best insurance is knowledge, because if you have the knowledge of how to drive safely and properly, then your insurance shouldn't be very high. I mean, accidents are going to happen. That's all there is to it, you know. But if you have the knowledge and the skill to drive properly, obey the rules, the knowledge of the rules, the laws of the road, and you use them, and then you also learn that courtesy driving is even by far safer than anything else you could possibly do.
Yep.
Think of the other fellow. You know, somebody tries to pass you, don't speed up and cut them off.
But the point Sky Blue made was that because you have the ultimate responsibility on you, that is why people drove so much better before they had that cushion to fall back on. That is why, you know, the world that we're living today, if we took responsibility on ourselves instead of relying on some fancy words of a politician that may or may not do what they say when they get in there, if we took that responsibility upon ourselves to hold their feet to the fire, and even the mainstream media, when they're lying and telling all the stories and then propaganda, we hold their feet to the fire because they have a responsibility. People believe what they say. If you want to get the truth out of the mainstream media, stop watching them until they decide to tell the truth. And when they ain't telling the truth, stop watching them. You'll watch them. They'll pay attention to that. You know, there was a time when they would not even remotely touch anything close to a conspiracy theory on mainstream media. But after the alternative media smacked them down, they turned around and they started having to touch on subjects that were otherwise considered to be by the mainstream media taboo because it didn't fit the agenda. But now they have to get in there and they have to say something about it. They have to try to skew it towards their direction, the way that they want the story to be told. The trick about the whole deal is, all along, the alternative media, such as these networks and Haggy Shack Radio and TCT Radio and all the other affiliated networks, were out there telling it the way that they saw it. And now there's a different story on the table. Now more people are flocking to alternative media because they feel like alternative media, being the average Joe, can be trusted more than the corporations that tell these people what they can say and what they can't on TV. So
on that note, Shaz, regarding lies in mainstream media can get away with lying and outright lying, blatantly lying, right? Because they're not classed as news. They are entertainment shows. For instance, Fox News, Rupert Murdoch's channels, right? He's Fox Entertainment, right? 21st Century Fox. It's all about entertainment. So if you took him to court, obviously the slander and libel are still open, but they don't need to report the truth, right? They can just lie and get away with it because they're entertainment. But you as an independent news source, if you lied, right, they could take you because you being an independent still come under the class of news.
Yep.
right? Yeah. If you understand what I'm saying.
Oh, I understand but exactly.
Mainstream media and entertainment, and they can just lie, right?
That's
why I very rarely ever read an article from mainstream media sources, because
The more people that subscribe to their channels and to watch the doomsday and what comes next, the more doomsday they'll put out, and then everybody begins to look for a superhero in a politician. Well, the reality of the matter is that politician isn't your superhero. You personally are your superhero that you've been looking for all along. You got to get out there.
I found my superhero, and you're right, it is me. Carry on, Chaz.
Yeah.
Come back to me. You were saying something, and it slipped my mind.
I hate it when that happens. Yeah, that, like I said, you know, we're looking for superheroes in our representation that, you know, like the president. We get this one president. Sure, some of us are relieved because the other candidate looked like the other candidate was going to do more harm than good, and sometimes it's a case of a lesser of two evils, but we got to stop that mentality. We got to start finding the people who really belong in office, and I'm not talking about the rich man that lives on the best side of town. I'm talking about the farmer who's actually out there doing work, who knows what needs to be done, who knows which direction and what regulations are harming his business and the farming communities as well. Because, you know, if you ain't taking care of the person that feed you, if you're biting the hands that feed you, which is the farmers, you know, they do a lot of work for this world, and it's a lot of it goes unnoticed. You know, if you go into a farming community, and I've seen this many times, you'll listen to these farmers talk and how they treat each other with respect. They will actually grow more than what they need in there, so that the people in their community, they trade off fruits and vegetables and things that they've grown in their gardens and on their farms. And they help each other, they take care of one another, because they know what it's like to have to struggle. It's a lot of work being a farmer. It's a lot of work that doesn't get the gratification that it should get. You know, and if we have to have a military, then we need to know that the folks that are out there defending the country, if they're doing it honorable intentions and stuff like that, those are folks that need to be respected. You know, people that sacrifice something. We've got law enforcement people out there that are good individuals that are out there to do the right thing. But it's the little bit, you know, it's kind of like sometimes Raymond said this one time about the orchard or whatever. But if you get a bad apple in a good bunch, then eventually that one bad apple, if left to be there long enough, will cause the rest of them to rot right alongside of it. And so we know these things. We've got this knowledge in our head. We know how to fix things. We know how to keep the bad apples out of the batch. We know how to do so much stuff. We have access to so many bits of knowledge that we've never had before. We're standing in a golden age right now. It's a miracle to even be here, but it's amazing as well, because of all the problems in the world. Right now, we have access to the solutions, one another, and the research that each one of you's done, the life that you've walked. I mean, I talk about the path that I took to get here, and it was a rough path, and I suppose I don't want anybody going down that path. And so I'm trying to use my words of wisdom, just like Raymond and Sky Blue sitting here on the Knights of the Round Table, trying to use our words of wisdom to give you some sort of light at the end of the tunnel and some common sense and some hope that, you know, forget the doomsday. We're going to avert the doomsday by realizing our true potential. We're going to figure out a way to motivate the world to fixing all that is wrong. And we have that capability. We honestly do. It's an overwhelming task. And so the naysayers will come out of the closet. The trolls will come out of the closet. The government paid shills will come out the closet. So everything positive that we put on the table for the people to see a light at the end of the tunnel, such as new energy technologies that could in the so-called war on oil, or basically reduce this carbon footprint that everybody thinks is a problem, when in reality it's not. But nonetheless, if that is the problem that they see, and we have a solution on the table to resolve said problem, and then instead of trying to back each other and saying to the government, look, we know we can run a car on hydrogen, we want this technology available to the public, pass a law, make it so, you know, whatever, using that system to do the bidding of the people is what it was supposed to be like. But instead, we allowed our superheroes to run our lives in the direction that we're going right now. We allowed our superheroes to tell our children to go to war and to fight the boogeyman on the other side of the world. In the same process, and it's hypocritical to even not realize what's happening here. One hand, reduce your carbon footprint. Other hand, drones strike a building and throw a bunch of God knows what up in the atmosphere. What's that building made out of? Plastics, asbestos, and chemicals, and all that kind of stuff. Not to mention the bodily harm done to innocent civilians who just may be in the wrong place at the wrong time. So by throwing that bomb down there, you just took and made the mess even messier than it was before. And then corporations being allowed to go into what they classify as third world nations and build their products there, pay the people a lesser wage, and pollute their environment at the same time, and then be able to leave and live in their comfortable communities and leave a mess behind for these poor people. You didn't uplift them up. You oppressed them to the situation to where now they are your new enemy. They hate your guts. They hate America because they think America is going to keep doing this to them. And I said this I don't know how many times. Until we break these cycles, it's going to be the exact same story as we saw when the reporter was asking the little Palestinian girls, do you ever want peace with Israel? And they said, no, we hate Israel. They killed our mommy and daddy. Well, flip that coin on the other side of the fence and ask two little Israeli girls the same question, and maybe they say the same thing. No, they killed our mommy and daddy. Until we figure out a way to break those chains of violence, then it's going to continue down the same exact road, just like in every abusive family relationship out there, where the father's beating the mother or the mother's beating the child, and that child's raised up like that, believing that that's the way that things go. You get mad, and in order to fix the problem, you beat somebody up. You understand what I'm trying to say here? The power is truly in the people's hands if you choose to use it.
Exactly what you're saying, and you are 117.5% correct.
I have a solution.
Well, we're all up about solutions.
Yeah, right. All these problems concerning war all started shortly after World War II. What went on? Basically, all these war departments changed their names to defense departments, right? So here in the UK we've got Ministry of Defense. In America it's Department of Defense. They were called the War Departments before, and their sole concern was war. Now, the reason why they did that was basically so that both our nations could have standing armies, okay? The UK at that time was a bit different because we had an empire to run, right? So we were invading countries continuously. But I digress. The point I'm making is that if we revert back to changing what their real names are, the Department of Defense in America is no interest in defending America. It's about invading and attacking other countries for corporations. But because they're called the Department of Defense, you think they're there to defend your country, when in reality they're just there to go to war. But if you actually change their name back to what they are, was the War Department, people would realize, hey, why are we giving money to the War Department. Maybe we should stop spending so much money on the War Department and focus on just defending our borders, right? Because that's basically what the Department of Defense should be doing, but they're not, right? So if you call them what they really are, then you would restrict their funding. If you're seeing what I'm getting at, it's just getting into the minds of people, pointing out the lies and deception that's being used on them by changing the name and giving them unlimited funding for doing what they did originally rather than what they should be doing.
There's a tactic that all the bullies of the world have used throughout generations. You know, bullies are surrounded by a lot of people, but most of the people aren't surrounded there because they think the bully's a nice person. That, you know, they think that as long as they're around this big bad bully, then they'll be protected. You know, nobody will mess with me as long as I'm standing around this bully. But the bully, he's got a tactic that he uses. If he keeps you afraid of him, then, you know, you're going to not give him any trouble. You're going to give him whatever he wants. You're going to do what he says. And all the people that want to one day grow up to be that bully, you know, being able to be the one with the power, they're going to turn their lives over in fear to this person and follow them blindly. And that's what happens so much in our societies, is that the governments have become literal bullies. You do what I say, or else you'll pay the consequences. And what the deal was, we allowed them to do it. Under the guise of patriotism, under the guise of safety, you know, Thomas Jefferson said the price to freedom was eternal vigilance. And there was a whole lot more to that statement than meets the eye. One of which is, if you're willing to give up your freedom for safety, you're not going to get either or. And that's been proven so many times over and over. It doesn't matter which flag you're under, or which country, or the type of, whether it be communism or, you know, any of the other major name brands of societies out there. It never works, because it never is for the people. The closest that we've ever been able to get in the history of time is the experiment that is the United States and the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, that where the people held the ultimate power, and the checks and balances set in place between the executive and the legislative and the judicial branches of government were, you know, at they were under the people's control. They were held accountable for their actions. There wasn't a chance for one party to be able to get more powerful than the other, and the controversy would go on as long as these folks were over there spending time debating on where we should go as a nation. Then the people had time to pay attention to see what they were talking about, and when they found something that was going on that they didn't like, they could take their vote to the polls and choose a candidate that they wanted and out one that they didn't want. So this system has lasted longer than any other system. That's one of the reasons why the global elite have to get rid of this system. Because
But you kind of destroyed the system when you legalized bribery and called it lobbying.
Sure.
You know, the lobbying's only been around for, what, about 120 years, isn't it?
Yeah, that's...
It wasn't around in Washington's time.
But that goes to back to the whole infiltration portion of it, to where if you infiltrate, if you want to take America down... There's a Chinese general that said the reason why they'll never do a ground invasion is because behind every blade of grass would be a gun, and they're so true. And so in order to be able to set it up so you could invade it, the very, very first thing you'd want to do is get somebody inside who could figure out a way to get gun control enacted so that nobody could have guns. And if nobody had guns, then they're an easier target than the ones who do, because you can't fight machine guns with pitchforks. Now, while I'm not an advocate of violence, I do advocate being ready for worst-case scenario, and if need be, you defend yourself with whatever you have means to. But the biggest...
Yeah, exactly. That was local militia.
Yeah.
That's, by rights, how the United States was defended, and it was Japanese Admiral Yamamoto who actually said that.
Oh, okay.
Chinese general.
Well, I couldn't remember.
Just Yeah, I know what he's saying. You're right in what he said. It was just wrong person. You're absolutely correct in that. You know, this is why the United Nations is following Adolf Hitler's policy of gun disarming the populace. You know, if everyone is armed, there'd be far less crime in the world, because everyone would be so polite. You know, a polite society is an armed society.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to mess with someone who's got a gun, are you?
I would be willing to bet that if you went back in time, like, say, during the Roman ages... Hold on a second, Raymond.
Wait a minute. I've got something. He just said something. I want to bring a point out. That was an experiment that was done in a small town in Texas many years ago. They passed a law that anyone over the age of 21 had to carry a gun in public. Once that law was enacted, crime dropped 80% overnight.
I can see why. But I'd be willing to bet that if you went back in time to a time when, like, during the Old West or whatever, I think there would be probably less likely that somebody would be breaking into somebody's house back in those days, because everybody carried a firearm.
Exactly.
You know, and even back further, whenever there were, like, soldiers with people that had swords or whatever, you know, everyone had a weapon in their hand. You might want to think twice before you fight with them. That kind of stuff. But it's sad that we even got to defend ourselves against all this craziness. We should be able to live in a world to where, you know, it's not necessary to carry around weapons. If there was ever somebody in this world that thinks that they wanted to get rid of guns and weapons and all that, then my suggestion to them is, you show the world how to be safe. You show the world how to not live in fear. You stop telling the world that there's a boogeyman behind every single bush. You stop telling everybody that there's a terrorist or a doomsday, and let them be able to relax, and then you might get them to agree to put down their arms. But in the meantime, unfortunately, we live in a time where it's not safe always to go outside. It's not safe to walk down certain neighborhoods, because you put a racial divide out there to such an extent that if you're the wrong color in the wrong neighborhood, you might have a problem. And it's not like that all over the world, but it's the truth that there are some places that, you know, I as a white man can't go. And it ain't because I don't like somebody of different colors, because I know that they have been told for so many years how terrible all white people are. They got this terminology that they're throwing around right now called white privilege. How disgusting is that? I mean, that's like the racial flip-flop. It's, you know, basically...
Yeah, that's pure racism, exactly. And it's they're doing that to bring America into a racial civil war. But you mentioned a point earlier about going back to Roman times where everyone had a sword. In that era... And it went right through, I'd say forever. A free man was armed. A slave wasn't.
Yeah, there's the point.
Society is being disarmed because they want to bring the world into slavery. I don't know if you've seen the film Lord of the Rings, the first one of the trilogy. There's a scene where they get... the hobbits get captured and they're told to bind their arms, but they're not disarmed, right? They still had their swords, but their hands were bound, right? Later on in the film, they get attacked by some ring wraiths in a city, and Frodo pulls out his sword that he was still carrying, even though he was a prisoner. You know, he was a free man armed as a prisoner. You know, they didn't disarm him because, you know, he's a free man. You shouldn't disarm him. Bind his hands so he can't fight, but he was still armed, you know.
Yeah, that's a brilliant point. That's a brilliant point, especially when you said that you know, you disarm the slaves and you arm the free man. You know, I choose to be a free man. You know, I want to be able to defend myself if need be. I don't want to be a slave, and I don't think anybody else out there in this world wants to be a slave. But you got to understand that the terminology that's thrown around, such as white privilege, that's counteracted, because it goes all the way back to those two little girls that was asked about the, do you want peace with Israel? They said no, because they killed my mommy and daddy. Alright, well, why would I want to give up my guns when somebody's out there killing somebody's mommy and daddy? Why would I want to give up my guns when they tell me there's a terrorist that wants to behead me because of my spiritual beliefs or whatever? Why would I want to give up my guns if there's a potential that we're going to get invaded by another nation, communist or otherwise? Why would I want to give up my guns if there's a burglar or a boogeyman or anybody that's trying to get me or my family? You see, that's the whole thing. Scare the people into thinking life is so terrible. Have all these doggone school shootings. Tell everybody of all the torment, and use their hearts against them to basically take down their arms, to put down your arms. And the moment your arms are down and you don't no longer have the option to defend yourself, then you become as easy to overcome as the sheep in the dang field, man. And that's where they put us.
I'm going to be totally sarcastic here and do from a leftist point of view and say, hey, well, in that situation, you pull out your cell phone and you fire a 911 at him.
Yeah, and how far away from you is the police station? Where I live, 45 minutes. It could be 45 minutes to an hour to potentially never, depending on how busy they are before they got to my property. So by the time I get on there and call 911 and they finally get here and show up, I'm already dead.
That's exactly the point I was making. You know, it's so ridiculous to rely on somebody else when it's here and now. Whatever the situation, it's here and now. It's down to you to deal with it. You know, you spill some milk. Hey, you don't ring up your mother and say, hey, Mum, I spilled some milk. Do you mind coming over and mopping it up? You deal with it yourself, don't you? You know, I'm being mugged. 911, hello, I'm being mugged. Can you deal with this situation? The cop's going to turn around to you and say, well, just give me your wallet and we'll take a description later. Right? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know.
There's a story about an older retired gentleman. And it was late, really late at night, like 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning. And he woke up and decided he needed a drink of water. So he went downstairs and in case he got some water. He just happened to look out the back door and he saw his garage light was on and the door was wide open. And he knew he did not leave it that way. He got to watch it, and next thing you know, he saw three men hauling all his tools and stuff out of his garage and putting it in a pickup truck. He picks up a phone, calls the police. They tell them what's going on. They go, well, we can't send anybody out there right now. It's going to be an hour before we get there. Just don't go out and mess with them. If you don't want to get hurt, they'll take what they want and we'll come by and get a prescription, just like Scott Blue Eyes said. So he hangs the phone up. He waits about 2 or 3 minutes, and he calls them back up, and he says, by the way, he said, I take your time coming out to my house. He said, I just went out there and shot and killed all three of them. And he hung up. It was not 3 minutes. 3 minutes, and there were 6 patrol cars in his yard.
Yep.
Yeah, well, you know, they've got a crowd that they can actually handle, you know.
But the thing is, when one of the officers told him to, sir, do you realize we can arrest you for false information to a policeman? And he said, do you realize I can take you to court and sue you for lying to me? You told me you couldn't get here for an hour, and you were here in 3 minutes?
Yeah. That's the thing.
They come.
All these examples and all these words that we've spoken here today is basically to point out to you that you're better off doing things yourself. And as far as this world, if you're going to fix this world, it's going to take all of you. Every single one of you. It's going to take you to not submit to all these crazy things that the governments of the world want you to do. It's going to take you to not be willing to go to battle for something unless you know for a fact it's a life or death. They're going to come and tear your country apart, whatever. You know, when you retaliate, somebody else retaliates. And that's the way that it always has been throughout the history of time. I'm going to get you, sucker, for what you just did to my family. All right, that's it. I'm bound and determined. Well, if everybody on the world is continuing to retaliate and fight wars that were started by global elitists of the world, oil companies and corporations, and you're literally feeding the beast that is eating you alive. And the beast is happy. The beast is powerful, and the beast is getting everything that it wants because it has you right where it wants you. All it got to do is do the whole Jerry Springer behind the scenes scenario. You know, aggravate your brother and tell your brother that you said something bad, and then he tells you the same story, what your brother said something, and next thing you know, you and your brother's fighting. And that's how it's been going on all along, and that's how they sell you all the doomsday supplies, that's how they sell you guns and ammunition, and when you get out there and hurt each other, that's how they sell you the medicine and the doctor bill and everything else that that has to do with it. They sell you, they sell the armies the food, the medicine, the weapons, everything. The fuel to get them there. Somebody out there right now is playing both sides of the fence and both sides making so much money off of... have you ever seen that movie with Nicolas Cage in there that he's a gun dealer?
War.
Huh?
Lord of War.
Yeah, Lord of War. He's selling to both sides of all the different civil wars out there. And it's just, if you ever watch that movie, it takes a while throughout the entire movie before he finally gets what it is that he just did and has any kind of remorse about it at all. But, you know, that's what's going on. The governments, the special interests, they got agendas. They want the world to come out a certain way. Their certain way is that maybe in their mind the ends justify the means. We can bomb somebody into the Stone Age and make them submit to selling us something cheaper or allowing us to keep our money situation the way that we got it. You know, it's good to be the king. You're all powerful. Your dollar bill is the standard money for around the world. Well, maybe it's time that the standard monies of around the world went away. Maybe it's time that all the monies of the world went away. Maybe it's time that common sense and knowledge rule the day instead of the people out there that are fighting and dying for that almighty dollar bill or that almighty ruble or the yen or whatever it is that you got in your nation. If you pick up a handful of change, especially if you're in America, do it right now. Reach in your pocket and pick up a handful of change. Take a real good long look at the modern day change. It's junk. It's not even worth the shape it's in. You wash it in a washing machine and the stuff begins to corrode almost instantaneously. The pennies are like copper coated zinc. They're not even solid copper anymore. Our money was supposed to be backed by gold and silver. Gold and silver is long since gone. We're now under the petrodollar, so that means the price of oil will determine the value of that dollar bill in your hand. And that dollar bill in your hand doesn't even belong to you, and they say it blatantly on the note that this is property of the Federal Reserve, which isn't even a government entity, it's a private bank. And 99.9% of all the people that carry that money in their hand have no idea. Because it's not taught in school that this is the way it is. It's not taught in history class of how they infiltrated the U.S. Senate and the Congress and was able to hand the power over to a non-governmental entity. So they're not representing you, and they have the power over you. They can start wars. They can start financial collapses. One day they could step out there and say, well, look, we're changing money. Your money ain't no good anymore. You're flat broke. Everyone's on the same exact level, and you know how many people are going to be angry about that? Go think about the stock market crashing back in the 1930s and how many people were standing outside the banks. Farmers and machinists and people that had worked hard for a living and they were scared that their savings was forever gone. And everything that they had worked for all their life, they lost. They were angry. They were frustrated. They were scared. They were ready to tear the world apart. Think about that.
Yeah.
That's the power that they hold over the people's head. And if you learn how to build a different system right alongside theirs, a barter system, just one example, I need some flour, you've got some corn or whatever, you want to trade, whatever, and we swap our goods and services and our work for each other, and we get by. And then
each man has his own value on his
blood. Yeah. And so, basically, if the system ever did collapse, then we would be prepared. We would be ready. There would not be an issue. The whole entire financial system could fall flat on its face, and we would be fine. And that's the point that I'm trying to get to people. If it's a financial doomsday that you're thinking about happening out here, then get your family and the friends and all your neighbors and your community prepared for just such an emergency, that if it falls apart, you can still go to work, you can still do business, you can still have things of value, trading, your goods for other goods and services. It doesn't have to be a piece of paper that you use for money. You can use your work, you can use whatever resources you've got available. And so the financial collapse doomsday just went out the window. As far as World War III and potentials of that, you make sure that you keep an eye on what the doggone politicians are doing and saying, the threats that they're telling you. The newest one is like Korea is going to nuke the United States. Those turkeys can't even, North Korea can't even get a rocket to fly straight in the air. And at this point in the game, they couldn't nuke us if they wanted. But nonetheless, it's been told to us. They're a threat. We're always under threat, And this is how things get started. If you ever get the opportunity to sit down and watch a video series, my suggestion for you would be to go watch the series Jericho. Just watch it from start to finish. Watch every single episode and watch how people reacted through the entire deal. And watch the secret agenda finally unfold through the deal and match it up to what you see in reality. You might just be surprised. You might come out the other side of that video series with a little bit of enlightenment and those words of Thomas Jefferson ringing in your head about the price of freedom being eternal vigilance. I mean, it ain't the first time that a country's bombed itself in order to get something accomplished, some sort of agenda, or to get us into war. They say that we knew about the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor before it ever even occurred. And instead of nipping it in the bud, you had to convince the people that we needed to go to war, and so what better way to do it than allow many hundreds, if not thousands, of your Navy soldiers or Navy sailors or whatever to be harmed, and all your ships sunk in pier, or then in port or whatever. And then that is the justification. Now you've rallied up the troops. You've got all the people of America standing behind you, and you rush off to war. Now, maybe it was a good thing we went to war, but maybe it was a bad thing as well. I don't know, because the history is always told by the victor, and you never know whether or not you can believe what anymore because of all the propaganda. All I'm saying is common sense has to rule today, because war is never good. Peace has never came through the end of the barrel of a gun. Peace has never come by the sword. Peace comes through wisdom and common sense and doing what is right when you know it's time to do that.
On those notes, you mentioned money and war in the same paragraphs and sentences, and they are both combined, because both World War I and World War II were related to financial crisis. They used the wars to hide the financial crisis, because nobody's going to talk about how much less their money is worth when you're at war. And if you do start talking about it, the powers that be turn around to you and say, sit down, shut up, don't you know there's a war on?
Yeah.
And this is why they're bringing us to World War III. Right, and you do need eternal vigilance to stop this. If everyone is aware of what's going on, and focus on the fact that, hey, this is just to hide the fact that our money is worthless. It's junk because they're just printing it out of thin air nowadays. That's why they're saying everything evil in the world is the Russians, right? It's the Russians' fault. The Russians hacked your elections. The Russians hacked British Brexit. The Russians did it. You know, if your dog craps in a dog craps in the street and you slip on it, it was the Russians' fault, according to the news. But the point I'm making is that the Russians, right? That they're not interested in war. They wanted Donald Trump to be president because they can speak to him. Hillary Clinton would fire first and then ask questions and say, what does it matter if they weren't going to war? We're going to war.
Yeah.
That's the kind of person Hillary Clinton is. You know, she's a total warmonger. She's bought and paid for. But the point I'm making is that wars are to disguise economic crises. You know, if something's going on in your country, they bring you to war. For instance, if we go back to 9/11, the day before 9/11, you had, what's his name, Dick Cheney announcing, oh, we've just lost $2.3 trillion in the Pentagon. We've lost it, can't find it, no idea where it's gone. Somebody like me dropped my wallet and it was full of $2.3 trillion.
Yeah, do you realize how big that is? Do you realize how...
That's what I'm saying.
If you stacked it all on pallets, how much room that would take up?
The moon and back?
Yeah, how do you lose that?
I don't know, it just happens. But 9/11 occurred the day after, and everyone forgot about that one.
Yeah.
And you've been in the longest war in American history in Afghanistan, just from the lie of 9/11, you know. And it's clearly an inside job, just to disguise the fact that we've lost $2.3 trillion. And the reason why it's such an inside job is the 16 who died at the Pentagon were the audit team who was assigned to find a missing $2.3 trillion, you know. It shouldn't be difficult to find, because it's such a large amount.
Yeah.
But that's why they were killed with whatever blew up the Pentagon. And I definitely will say that it was not an airliner that crashed into that building.
Well, that's the whole point of eternal vigilance, folks. We're getting down to the wire there. But, you know, the thing about it is, if we stand in ignorance and we don't pay attention to what's happening in this world... Sure, we got to talk about a lot of different subjects that aren't always pleasant. And there are things out there in this world that are so incredibly evil that need to be addressed. But what I'm trying to point out to you folks is that if you decide to take the wrong road and you decide to live in fear, you're going to make, like Sky Blue said, you're going to make the wrong choices because you lived in fear. You're going to give up your freedom. You're going to give up your sovereignties because of fear for safety. You're going to give it up. And then at the end of the day, history's already shown that that never goes well for anybody who's ever tried it. I mean, they say that in the areas where they got total gun control, that the violence it hasn't stopped. Now it's since you ain't got no guns, you use a club, a stick, or a knife, and... You know, folks, the very first murder in my book of faith talked about a man killing his brother with a rock, for Pete's sake. So if a man's got it in his heart to do somebody harm, it doesn't matter. It's not the weapon that does the damage. It's the person that does the damage. And so if we're going to walk to the future with some wisdom, and we're going to keep our eyes peeled and hold those that we choose to be in our... powers, leadership or whatever, positions of leadership or representation, then we have to pay attention to what they're saying. And we have to take their words literally, because the words do matter. You think the words don't matter? Go stand in the courtroom and you be the one on the defendant side, and you try to explain to the judge and say the wrong words and the wrong time, and the system will manipulate the words that you just said because you have no understanding of the words that are coming out of your mouth. You can communicate with people, but if you don't understand their version of the meanings of those words, you might as well just hang yourself, because that's exactly what you did when you opened your mouth and talked to them. You know, I know that's a terrible thing to say, but that's what's happening to the world. That's what's happening to everybody out here. You're being constantly manipulated via terminology. You're being constantly pitted against each other for race, creed, or color, or political view. And if you're out there shouting Black Lives Matter and white privilege, then you're just counterproducting your same argument. You just become what it is that you claim to despise. And it's sad, because at the end of the day, you still lose. The governments of the world win. The people behind the scenes that wanted to keep you pitted against each other. Because you think, as a white man, I'm not offended or upset when somebody tells me I got white privilege, when I know where I've been, I know what work I've done, I know my heart, I know that I'm not a racist or a hateful person that's out to hurt anybody just because they look different or believe a different way than I do. I'm going to be offended. And if that offense turns into you perpetuating violence against me, I'm going to have to defend myself. And thus forth, the doggone cycle of violence, it just never stops. They know this. The notorious they, the people of the world who are in charge, the people of the world who are selling you guns and ammunition and generators and prepper supplies and everything it is that you hear every time that you go rush out to get, because doomsday's coming around the corner. The finances are going to collapse, the foods are going to close, the banks are going to close, so you got to stock up silver, you got to stock up food, and you got to do all this stuff. And by the time you get it up to where you think you're slightly comfortable, well, then it's all expired. Now you got to go out and do it again. And doomsday just got moved. Instead of being 4th of July, now it might be next December before doomsday gets here. Are you noticing a trend? They're manipulating the people so badly.
An issue there with your food. As it comes close to its expiry date, you start eating it. I've got 3 months' supply of food. As I eat the older stuff, we stop with new stuff.
Yeah, that's
so
a good plan.
I'm all right for 3 months. But you know, that's not for a disaster. You know, there could be a local disaster. I live in a city called Portsmouth. It's an island city, you know, and it's a very flat city. It's an island city, but it's still prone to flooding. You know, a tsunami could come up the English Channel and flood out the city. But I've got food. I'm all right. I've got water. I'm all right. You know, it's just preparedness. It's the Boy Scout in me that's doing that.
Yeah,
it's not for doomsday, because a doomsday situation, I could care less.
Yeah, you know, you took the time.
If they go nuclear on me, I'm dead.
Yeah.
Because Portsmouth is also the UK's Admiralty through its entire navy. So that's the prime target.
If they
go nuclear, I'm dead.
The key is this, that you took the time to exercise your own responsibility to be the caretaker for yourself, and bought yourself a space cushion for all those minor events that might happen, or even major events, as long as it ain't thermonuclear. And that is the point that needs to be made to everyone else out there, that while you have opportunity to do so, you're buying car insurance because you have to in case of wreck, you buy house insurance, start insuring yourself. Ensure yourself with knowledge, ensure yourself with wisdom and common sense. Be eternally vigilant, like Thomas Jefferson said. Go out there and do something positive for your brothers and sisters in the world, and show them, like that lighthouse, you know, the way to safety. It's as simple as that. We can fix this thing if we choose to do so. So with that said, you've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table, but I want to go around the table and give you guys your last words of wisdom. So who wants to go first? Go ahead, Raymond.
What you said about Thomas Jefferson, the price of freedom, eternal vigilance. Well, there's also another saying that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And those two go together. That's what eternal vigilance means. It means you've got to watch the power goes.
Yep. Don't turn it. Don't turn the power over so easily without doing your research. Know the man that you're handing the power to. Know the woman. Know them. You know, find out what they've done in the past. Find out the trends. Study them hard, because you got a long time between elections to learn out what the candidates are up to and what they've done in the past. And watch yourself while you're out there doing your research, because there's those folks out there that have the same agenda as the same individual you're thinking about voting for that may be trying to skew the information to match that agenda. You see what I mean?
I see exactly what you mean.
So how about you, Sky Blue?
Yes. The issue of today's show was doom, and the point I want to make is that life should be lived without fear. Excuse me. No more fear. That's what you should aim for. If you don't understand something, do not fear it. Learn about it.
Exactly.
Understand it. Do not live in fear.
Yeah.
Something I said to Shaz last week was, if you live in your mind, you will live in hell. If you live by your heart, you will live in heaven.
Yep.
And the point I'm getting at with that one is that all your fears are generated in your mind, right? Control your mind. Understand what makes you fearful. Dismiss it. If you have phobias, learn to overcome them. Do not live in fear. You know, if you've got a fear of heights, for instance, take up skydiving. I did. I don't mind falling at all. In fact, every time I fall over, I land perfectly okay, because I'm relaxed about it. It's the moment you start falling and you all tense up, that's when you break bones.
Yep.
Right? You know, no more fear. That's what you've got to aim for. If we did not fear our neighbours, then we would not go to war with our neighbours. You know, no politician could convince you that this country is a problem because they are this way. Right? You know, obviously there are certain cultures that are brought up that way, but you don't need to fear them, you just don't need to interact with them, right?
Yeah.
It's not fear of them, you just don't interact with them.
Well,
it's that simple. So, you know,
the best thing
that's
is
the point I was making.
Well, that's awesome words of wisdom. Folks, we gotta go, but the best thing that I can offer you as far as some advice, and I try to live by example, is to try to remain humble and live life in love and be eternally vigilant, like Thomas Jefferson said. And as long as you're like that, then people will see you like that. They'll see your life, and if there's anything positive in your life, whether it be your political views or your spiritual journey that you're on, and they're more likely to adopt that which is good from you that they see works. And so with that said, throw the positive pebbles in the pond and show somebody else what you can do with the world. You have a lot more power than you can possibly imagine. And the day that the people of this earth choose to take back control of this world, the wars will stop, the hungry will get fed, the homeless will be sheltered, and the naked will be clothed. Right now, the emperor has no clothes, and I'm that guy shouting about it. So is Sky Blue, and so is Raymond. We're telling you, we're pointing it out. It's blatantly obvious. The emperor has no clothes. So you've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. Peace and love.
Man, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
How'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here! Oh! How'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table, we dance whenever we're able. We do routines and call the scenes and footwork impeccable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and scram a lot. We're knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-table. So many times we give and rhymes that are quite unsingable. We're off so mad in Camelot, we sing from the diaphragm alone.
I have to push the pram along.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Serves the terrible, and the knights of the round table.